fellow allies to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. So, let's all take a deep breath, that we can be agents of cool out, cool response in a hot, reactive field of horror, yes, and what are we to do? What can we do? How do we avail ourselves of all of our skills and we here? You know, I turned to Pacifica's chart, birth chart, April 15th, 1949. Pacifica was born out of an eclipse as Pluto was stationing. Right now, Pluto's stationing before an eclipse. And we go, woo. So it is good at dealing with this. You know, and again, I love the rising sign for our beloved Pacifica network. It's 10 plus Virgo, which the image is, a woman gives each of her children a loaf of bread and a spike of barley and sends them out into the world. The limitless ways that inherited spiritual values can find expression. Fearless venturing into the world, dispelling evil with the dedication to goodness. Pretty good. Pretty good, our station, our beloved community realm. So here we are, right? Here we are. Pluto stationing. Remember, you know, this beautiful astrological language is not causative. It's just like, we'd like your attention to work with Pluto, with what is hidden. You know, and I've been a long student of Pluto stationing, and Pluto always says, demons are dangerous and volatile in direct proportion to the force of their exclusion. Right? And it's Pluto stationing before an eclipse, which will be October 14th, my birthday. We'll be having a party open to everybody on Zoom on Friday, more of that in a moment. But it is wild, combustible, primal, spooky. And the metaphor for those of, you know, us who've had the great good fortune to be in an actual total eclipse, the one on Saturday is annular, but still cool. So what happens, everything real is also a metaphoric guide. So in an actual total eclipse, as the moon begins to cover the too bright light of the sun and turn it into an image of itself, so the sun looks like a crescent, the temperature drops, poof, the winds come up, whoa, and striation bands sweep rapidly across the land, and birds roost, and fish sleep, and it's spooky. It's primeval fear of life source dimming. And even scientists on the beach are like, woo. You know, and by analogy, you know, it's always thought of as before an eclipse, wild, combustible, primal, spooky. At the moment of totality, you know, if one's there, often people drop to their knees in orgasmic awe, not kidding, it's like, the dazzling beauty of the coronal necklace of solar flares around the sun, the stars and the planets that had been hidden become visible. In this case, Mars, Mercury, and Venus would be visible for those in the path of the annular eclipse. So the model is after an eclipse, after Saturday, possibilities of dynamic accord, justice, and peace can be perceived. It's why it's such an opportune time to gather now here. My dream council, we've been working this, this dream council disguised as a radio show, and then also tomorrow night, just for fun, it will be the Friday the 13th, Dark of the Moon Before Eclipse, Carolingian Birthday Zoom. But to continue our experimental work, you know, out of the cauldron, what do we want to ladle forth? And there's a brilliant Japanese sci-fi, but more, writer Haruki Murakami. And in his book, IQ84, there's a great disruption of the world. And the two protagonists notice, like, oh, there's a second moon. And they ask people, like, when did the second moon arrive? And people say, oh, it's always been here. And they're like, ooh. So they go backstage to restore, to dream up the desirable world as it was, but even better. You know, and then at a certain point, they open the sluice gates from the backstage imaginal desirable so that it pours into the realm of incarnational actuality. And I think that's a good thing to do. I think it's a good thing to practice. So this is Pluto Eclipse Radio, and I'll be replaying segments of a July 17th, 2008 show that I thought of, because it was when I hosted Yehuda Atai, a peace activist from Israel, joining us from Tel Aviv. Excuse me, biblical scholar, alchemist, modern computer, startup wizard, presenting the one-state solution, the Israeli-Palestinian democracy, with great ally Rod Suskin, traditional Sangoma from South Africa, that they would converse, and Rod would bring up, going, whoa, the unusual idea, but no more unlikely than the end of apartheid in South Africa. So I briefly got in touch with Yehuda Atai and goes, whoa, and he goes, no, can't talk now, right, of course. And we're going to play a few segments, a long segment first, like 13-minute segment, and just keep in mind that we know, as I wrote to him, you know, your dedication is more impossible and more necessary now. So let us do for all the peace activists everywhere and in Israel, you know, and in Gaza, you know, on their behalf to do what they can't, you know, the luxury of us gathering now, luxury is not the right word, the opportunity, responsibility of us gathering now to, you know, spiral into collective group mind, expanded responses, and trickster against all odds desirable miracles to cool out the conflagration. So as we listen, you know, and think of tyranny, tyranny has always needed an enemy. We'll dive into this after the first segment, everywhere. I was tracking down my sources that years ago told me that, you know, the Mossad created Hamas. They dragged the blind sheikh out of prison and funded him as a foil to Arafat. So gotta check sources, but metaphorically, you know, tyranny always needs an enemy. It's a complicity. You know, they co-create each other. So in this eclipse cauldron, let's pour things into it, the addiction to having an enemy, you know, the cruelty, and ladle out what Pacifica has always been dedicated to, which is all of us, each listener, all of us here are detectives. Like, when did this start? And did you know all of this? So we begin with segment one, Yehuda Atai, and Rod Suskin, Yehuda Atai from Tel Aviv, Rod Suskin. And keep in mind, this was from 15 years ago, but we are just using the imaginary molecules of this to invoke backstage. So here we go, clip one.
And it makes sense that we should make one state from the sea to the river, from the Mediterranean Sea to the Jordanian River. And we are essentially bound through history. We are bounded through our ancestors. We are connected to the same land, which is in the heart of many other people around the world. And this way we are protecting each other by the mere fact that we live together. And in fact, in reality, when you look at reality, and I see reality as an ever-present evolving energy with an infinite number of possibilities, and that we can also intervene in the possibilities that open for us to open up for change, to start a change in the whole process. So essentially what we are provocating and we are trying to bring up to the table in the Israeli media is the discussion of one state. And we have like 1.5 million Israeli-Palestinians living in Israel today, and about 3.5 million Palestinians living in the West Bank and Gaza. And maybe with the return of the Palestinians after an agreement will be achieved, maybe will be more or less like 10 million people living within each other. Maybe we don't have to. And by living within each other and together, we don't even have to build walls and cut cities and continue this kind of occupation for 40 years, and we should be at the state where we understand the Nakba, the fact that when we came, when the Zionist movement came to Israel to establish a state at the time, we created a displacement, and we created a situation whereby about 500 Arab villages have been evacuated, and many of them have been destroyed, and many others Israeli settlements have been being built. And we have to understand that we have to understand what we did, and we also have to understand that we have to understand the pain of the Palestinians on that issue, and there is a reconciliation that can be made on that issue, and we have to let the Palestinians who live in camps or abroad, any one of them, to come back. Even the Palestinians themselves conducted the surveys among their diaspora, and they found out that maybe 500,000 Palestinians will come to the greater Israel-Palestine from the sea to the river. Maybe. Israel itself, on half of the size of the area, received more than 1,000,000 Russian immigrants in 10 years and was able to absorb them. So this is not an issue, and it can be solved. It just needs leadership that understands that for the security of the people and for the tranquility, for the peace of the people to live their daily life, that is a solution that is doable.
And when you first presented this astounding a bold experiment, going, the mind does boggle, but you in our private backstage conversation, you said, one state, exactly as you said, since we have to have states, and someday maybe not, but yes, no borders from the sea to the Jordan River, intertwined, so the reward is security, no place to bomb, everything intertwined. And what you'd also said, I just want to put this on the table for all of us, and we can animate it and go, and when I asked you again about a democracy, and you said, well, the numbers are actually perfect, 5 million Israeli Jews, 1.5 million Israeli Arabs living there, right of return to everyone with recompense. This will take some time. We're going to bring Rod in on this one. And you said, and this new state of bold experiment would give Jerusalem to the world.
Yes.
Yeah, this is breathtaking.
I think Jerusalem could be the first city of the world. We should also allocate some pieces of land, few acres here and few acres there, to allow different people in the world, like Buddhist or Japanese or others, to build their halls of prayers in Jerusalem. I think that everybody will enjoy it. Everybody, I don't think the city will be filled with people around the world that will come to live there. I think the Jerusalemites will live in Jerusalem, and the rest will come to visit, and everybody will definitely will benefit out of it. Not only that, the cost of security comes down, the tension comes down in the entire area of the Middle East. I take the view that we have to conduct actions that reduce fear. Fear is the cheapest manipulative element that politicians use to stray people away from the real issues. And as such, we are also, as I told you, working on the fact that the entire Middle East area should be a free zone area of weapons of mass destruction.
Yes.
And on this issue we are working too. And we are putting it on the table. And just a week ago we brought up to the air a site, an internet site in Hebrew to the Israelis on the fact that, in fact, there is no deterrence. There is a death threat in the area in terms of weapons of mass destruction, and it is in the interest of all the people here to understand that we have to diffuse it by going into a free zone area, and we should push for it rather than escalate and threaten other countries from attempting to think about weapons of mass destruction, while it is well known all over the world that Israel has weapons of mass destruction. And me, as an Israeli citizen, I think that Israel should, the politicians in Israel should take the responsibility and take their energies and all the sources they have to convince world leaders in the U.S., in China, in Russia, in the European community, that is in the interest of the entire world that the Middle East should be free of weapons of mass destruction. And it is in the interest of the people in the Middle East, and it is in the interest of the entire people of the world. And as we will lift this fear that exists here amongst us that lives in this area, the moment this fear is being relieved, I think that opens up more and more faster ways towards peace and understanding, towards this development of one democratic state.
Yes, and we want to come right back to weapons of mass destruction. Who has what? The symposium you conducted in Israel and the dialogue you had with the Israeli military and government, who first tried to suppress the symposium, and then they all came. But we want to come to that, but also to one of the. When I tell this version of the story to people, people at first, of course, go, well, no, because, oh. And so we want to begin to address some of the issues. What one of the things you, the rewards, so there's the fear and the like, no, it is our, you know, it is only a Jewish state, blah, blah, blah. Okay, but the rewards, safety, and also, as you mentioned, you know, the Palestinian-Israeli state gives Jerusalem to the world, come all dedicated to peace. This is a place of pilgrimage. And as you said, in an important way, it becomes a positive, sacred, holy cash cow for the entire Middle East, Jerusalem.
Absolutely.
With everyone coming in. And I want to turn to Rod, because then people go, oh, okay, right of return, everybody gets to come back, we're going to do this experiment. And then the mind boggles and goes, whoa, how long? What is the process whereby you would metabolize sufficient poison and vengeance and enmity so that everyone mixing wouldn't blow each other up? And I want to turn to Rod, as you lived through the bold experiment of South Africa on that medicine, when people surely said, no, there will be so much violence. Okay, so can you just sort of bring some of the South African Sangoma medicine into this conversation at this point?
You know, my reaction when you first told me about what Yehuda was talking about, I did experience that no followed by the wow, but I think quite quickly, because it did strike me immediately, that why is it that no one's really thought that probably the only possible solution for Israel must be the only other time this has worked, and that is South Africa. And South Africa was exactly, as you say, a striking experience. When we all realized that it all works towards the fact that there was going to be democratic election, as much as everyone thought that idea was fantastic, everyone was terrified, and I think more people left the country in the years leading up to the coming democratic solution than at any other time. But there was an alchemy that no one could possibly have anticipated, and that is especially the fact that this is a land that honors an ancestral spirit, which is also exactly true of Israel, the oldest ancestral spirit of all. So what happened was that when we finally did get this democratic thing together, this transformation happened, and everyone surpassed those differences. The fact is that the spirit is the ancestors. It is the ancient people that we honor. And so it practiced what it preached. When we all sat down and started treating each other like human beings and talking to each other, we realized that because we're ancient friends, we've always lived in this country together, we speak the same language. And of course, it strikes me that the same is true for the Arabs and the Jews, that they've shared that land together for thousands of years, and they know each other as brothers. And it's a radical solution, but let's face it, all the other dialogue kind of solutions didn't work there and didn't exist here or work here. Because when people dialogue in the way that it's been done, this negotiated two-state kind of settlement, it always struck me that it was always done by outsiders, that it was always for the scoring of political points, and that you hardly ever heard from the people of Israel themselves. You heard from the radicals on all sides. But, you know, the people of Israel are always knew to be an essentially democratic people. And that's what's so exciting to me, to hear Yehuda, because I recognize what happened in this country. And that there was this impossible dream that the more you thought about it was the only obvious solution. And the fact is that 14 years down the line, we have a lot of the problems of regular countries. But in terms of political security and former enemies, those problems have been transcended.
Aha. Uh-huh. So we're back in our to-ing and fro-ing. This is the Visionary Activist Show. That was a replay from 2008. But remember, you know, again, with Yehuda Attai and Rod Susskind from Tel Aviv and Cape Town, respectively, conferring about the impossible desirable, even more impossible now and even more desirable. So we are availing ourselves experimentally of the opportune patterns around us all. Remember, Pluto stationing brings up everything, right? The demons are dangerous and volatile in direct proportion to the force of their exclusion. You know, and that theme, you know, we're referencing the one-state solution just, you know, to boggle the mind, going, oh, no, even more, no. And then, as Rod and Yehuda were saying, you know, it's the impossible dream and really the only way to go. I highly recommend Democracy Now!, well, always really, but October 11th with Mustafa Barghouti, who just did an essential for all of us to know narrative, you know, and of past and also what's brewing, you know, and that Bibi, Netanyahu, whose government was in disarray, more people in the streets protesting his authoritarian takeover of the Supreme Court that's on hold now, you know, but this, you know, what Mustafa Barghouti lays out is that, you know, Netanyahu would love to annex all of Gaza. It's pretty nakedly proclaimed, and the horror. You know, and even in the mainstream news, you know, Mary Louise Kelly interviewing Jack Kirby, I think White House spokesperson, and we can all yell at things, right? It's very hot now, which is why we gather here to cool out, but also to be hot when necessary. And Mary Louise Kelly was saying, well, you know, cutting off all water and medicine and electricity, and that's a war crime. What do you say? Jack Kirby, spokesperson for the administration, and he goes, no, well, you know, again, yes, it's we support an aggressive response, you know, which caused many of us to go, it is a war crime. No, what Hamas did, again, horrific, ongoing, horrific, you know, and again, we have empathic kinship with all. And that was not known to us in its long planning. There's a lot going on right now about the article and the photo of, you know, Trump handing Israeli intelligence to the Russians gleefully, little kid showing off, right? And some supposition that he gave Israeli intelligence to the Russians, well, he did, right? We don't know what it was exactly, but that then, you know, Russia then gives that intelligence to Iran, and Iran gives that intelligence to Hamas. We don't know the specifics. Was it how to get around the Iron Dome defense? We don't know. We're just putting things on the table as calmly as we can, those of us not under immediate assault, going, But it would be ironic if I mean, that's drawn a lot of people's attention, if Mossad handled our Trump problem, anyway, and then we will be doing more shows to activate, you know, or to research credibly, you know, that it was the Mossad that hauled the blind sheikh out of prison and funded him to create Hamas, and then it came alive, right? And I've heard from credible sources long ago, you know, that this was true, but we put it on the table, believe nothing, entertain possibilities, but at the very least as a metaphor, you know, and that authoritarianism always attacks authentic community. And in when I first met Rod in South Africa, you know, and everywhere there, people spoke as though it were yesterday about District 6 in Cape Town. And District 6 was a place of harmony among diversity. It was, you know, Jews and Arabs and Islamic people and Christians and African traditions and many, many, many all living together. It was famous. Every cab driver would talk to me about it, you know. And the apartheid government was like, no, we need to build parking lots there, or I can't remember what it was. But everyone said that, you know, they couldn't, because even though they destroyed this community, it was haunted. It was haunted by the smell of people cooking dinner together, you know, and the developers ran. They were spooked by it. We go, right. Right. Just as, you know, really Palestine before 1948, many people living in harmony with the land, you know, Jews and Arabs and Christians and more, in harmony with the land. And it's like, no, can't have that, must have imposed thing on top of the thing. And we go, okay. So remember that we are invoking, you know, Haruki Murakami's IQ 84 after the eclipse. You know, right now there is work to be done. Here we are, you know, there's a lot of cooperators standing by. And one of the images then is to say, well, in this hot eclipse cauldron of conflagration, you know, what shall we ladle out? What desirable vision? What impossible against all odds thing that the weapons refuse to fire? Because part of the long planning of Hamas was we didn't know about that, you know, only they knew about that, and maybe Russia and Iran and Trump, I mean, not Trump. we don't know. But this onslaught, you know, the demolition of Gaza, you know, and the desire to annex the West Bank and Gaza on the part of Netanyahu, do check out Mustafa Barghouti, October 11th, 2023, Democracy Now!, very lucid. Again, we want to know everybody. We want to know everything, because it's, you know, the two sides is these are tricky things, right? But it is a con, you know. And as Deborah Felmuth says, you know, salam, shalom, peace, pacifica. It's not the absence of conflict. It's the presence of oneness. We're all in this dream together. You know, and again, pressure comes down and it explodes, right? But this planning of the annihilation of Gaza, the mean-spirited, you know, I advise everyone in Gaza to leave, and all of us really go, where? Leave where? The northern border with Israel, or the border with Israel is closed. The border to Egypt is closed. There's the sea, but even if you swim into the sea, it's blockaded. You know, and we go, so it behooves, you know, all of us in some form, right, to go out of this. These are, you know, humans with whom we are kin, those living in Israel, those living in Gaza and the West Bank, you know, all of that. So we conjure, we imagine, we invite in, always our connection, you know, between human culture and nature. My friend David Grimes, when he was in Israel, he said he found it difficult in many, many ways until he crossed barbed wire and tracked the source of the Jordan River. And the source of the Jordan River begins in a cave sacred to Pan. I go, let's go there. Let's go there. Remember, this part of the world is a main migratory bird path. There's others than just humans. I mean, come on, team. So we're going to take a very short break given to us by Third World, and we'll be right back with all of this brewing together. Here we go.
Jobless people, starving babies, spreading over the land. More oppression.
how you play your hand. Forward fighting is the writing from those who say they know. And if that's true, we know just who you'll be picking to go. But the beat you are playing to what Jah is saying is wrong. And we do recommend that you stop before it's too far gone. And I just got to say,
you're playing us too close.
We in the ghetto. And hungry,
you're playing us too close.
Filling up more and more with frustration,
you're playing us too close.
That's Third World, great, evergreen, fabulous band. But again, yes, in keeping with right now, you know, again, pressure comes down. It erupts in volatile explosiveness in direct proportion to the force of its exclusion. Everywhere, I mean, anything that's anywhere is everywhere. We're focused on, you know, yes, the Gaza, Israel, West Bank, Ukraine. And then just tease it into any family drama or dynamic that one has. The forces are in play in little microdose ways, and we go, right. And we know that, you know, whatever we do, we get more. Whatever we do, we get more, right? It's a huge conundrum. So we know, and we'll dive into that. I'm going to bring it at some point, my tracking the Pluto stations through time, that, you know, a violent response resonates. We know that, you know, well, I talked to a conventional State Department person years and years ago, and we came to accord that the only solution to terrorism is a wonderful life for all children. And he was like, that's it. That's true. So we can go backstage and talk to people in many ways, you know, metaphoric or literal backstage, and go, yeah, that's right. You know, Yuda will delineate, and I think in the show promo, we've listed the whole show from 2008, which is worthy. You know, because part of what he had convened at that time was a forum on, you know, militarism in Israel. And talking across borders, you know, again, peacefully with Israeli military, and saying, look, we know Israel has 200 nuclear warheads that can take out a city of 5 million in a minute. That was in 2008. And he talks to the military, and they're like, deterrence. And he goes, well, here, let's, like in the movie War Game, you know, he puts his watch on the table. And goes, you know, play out any scenario you want, right? And all the military guys said, right, no, there's no winner. There's no winner in a nuclear war. There's no winner in a war here. They were like, right, because it engages more terrorism, and here comes Hezbollah, and the thing, and the hyper-Yang death frenzy, you know, everywhere, and the, you know, explosive volatility, and even in our micro-circumstance on social media, whoa, there's some ugly things being brought forward. So it's like, okay, it behooves us again to go backstage in this realm, and again, just to say, as in Haruki Murakami's IQ84, after the eclipse, you know, we conjure the desirable, and then we open the spirit sluice gates for the backstage. We conjure now to flow into incarnational realm of actuality. So just to keep this going, because, you know, it's there's so much to work with, right? So tomorrow night at 7:30 East Coast time, 4:30 West Coast time, it's Friday the 13th, right? And I want to reference that, but it's the Pluto stationing Friday the 13th, dark of moon before an eclipse, Carolingian birthday council Zoom. Just come join us, right? CoyoteNetworkNews.com. It's donation, whatever you feel like. It's my birthday. It was weirdly my birthday. But more importantly, it's to keep this quality going. to keep experimenting. Because the idea of people go, well, that's all very wizza wizza. And we go, right, but internal dedication magnetizes outward opportunity, right, against all odds. And the Jordan River, the thing, you know, because part of the dynamic now, the conversation, the guiding conversation in which, you know, all of creation is so troubled by, you know, the befoiblement of our rogue species destroying the earth, just, right, that it's a Libra-Taurus conversation now, the two Venuses. Libra is cultural Venus, and Taurus is animistic, sensual, land, stone, chipmunks, slime mold, mushrooms, flora, fauna, fungi. And they want an alliance. They want an alliance. And our dedication, you know, and again, inviting in some trickster ingenuity. I have been in circumstances where, you know, somebody had a machine that wasn't working, right? And I did... You know, the moment opens, and I did, and there was a lot of press and everything. The machine that ran on one tablespoon of gasoline and rest on water was not working. And, you know, cold fusion physicist says, more pressure, just lean on it. Nothing. And I just sensed the moment. May we all sense the moment without, you know, deriving status or hubris or anything. And I stepped forward, and I put one hand on the inventor and one hand on the machine and asked the inventor, do you vow that this technology will never be used for war? And he goes, I do. And the machine sprang to life. Va-va-va-boom, va-va-boom. And all the scientists in the press and Homeland Security even, you know, there's good-hearted people everywhere, you know, were so relieved that it wasn't just them. It's not just humans, right? And in all of the, you know, the activism with indigenous people so treasured around the world, and, you know, my friend Pauahi in Hawaii, who taught me so much, you know, to invite in Pele, we have examples of this. Again, we want to add more, but when there was a bad, you know, destruction of virgin forest plan to build some, I can't remember, but the Hawaiian allies gathered and they invited Pele, volcano goddess, very Pluto kind of being, to express her opinion, right? And so every time they tried to lay a foundation, lava emerged, right? And they're like, well, this shouldn't happen. Let's do it again. Oh, it happened again. Let's try one more time. Oh, it happened again. We're just tiptoeing away. You know, so we're just, again, playing, dedicating ourselves to something we love in nature and to people who love the land, transcending borders, right? We'll get to that. So let's go to our next clip from 2008 with Yehuda Atai in Tel Aviv and Rod Suskin in Cape Town. Here we go.
And by living together, we can protect our culture for hundreds of years to come. By living together, we get the best protection. By living together, we will be able to come up with more and more writings and beautiful things that can come out of this area for us and for the entire world.
And when, Rod, when I was describing last night to you, going, please come bring South Africa with you to this radio council, you know, and you kind of went, ooh, you know, because as the mind kind of opens, going, you know, the objections come up and you go, yes, but safety, yes, but wealth, yes, but ingenuity and water. Yes, but, you know, I again, because your mind was also kind of unfolding into like, whoa, right?
Exactly that. Because there is the moment of impossibility that you quickly then realize, even if it sounds naive, if you really think about it, it is not, that the only possible way that everything does become peaceful is with sharing and with equality. If people are forced to fight over resources or have the ability to deny each other resources, then you're never going to resolve the problem. And if people argue over whose the land is, you're never going to resolve the problem. But if you live together and share the land and share the resources, you begin to depend on each other. And that's the only thing that can possibly unite everyone together. And that's why I say, if you think about it for a second, you realize you actually can't argue against it. It is the only thing that makes sense. And that is most likely to work.
Yes, it's beautiful. And Yuda, you mentioned when you were describing to me the symposium that you were talking to the military people who were like, no, we could still, and you put on the table, you know, that for starters, you know, Israel has 200 particular kind of nuclear warhead that you said can take out a city of 5 million in 20 seconds and other things too. And then you put on the table who has what, you know, let's just throw it open.
Yes. Yeah.
And
this information is in the site. I mean, we did a search in the open media in the world, and we collected this information, and we assembled this information in such a way that we showed that who has the capabilities in terms of weapons of mass destruction and what kind of instruments they have to deliver these weapons, whether it's by rockets or by planes and so on and so on, and the quantities and the enormous threatening things that different countries in the area have, including Israel. And essentially, we put it on the table. I would like to say something, Rod, about what you think, if I may, Caroline, about South Africa. And what I have learned tonight from Rod, which is wonderful, is the fact that there is a great hope, because you see, from the story of South Africa, I can see that people at large, in their spirit, if we can look at the spirit of people as one spirit, they have so much reconciliation ability in them to reconcile so many tens and hundreds of years of hardship and slavery, and yet go through it, as you describe, through all these media and reconciliation processes and activities, and they have this big heart that people have, and it takes us to ignite it, maybe a person like Nelson Mandela, but it is the spirit of the people that really seeks, all the people wants peace, every person on an individual level.
I think that's so fundamental that we also need to realize that South Africa does illustrate that people would never believe it. But one thing that to this day, 14 years down the line, we still keep on saying is that it is amazing that once South Africans who had been enemies of each other for so long, once we were given the permission to like each other and treat each other as human beings, we did, and everyone got along very well and started liking each other. The natural humanity rose to the surface, and I think we have to trust that about ourselves.
And an important part, Yuda, that you mentioned is when you were talking to some Israeli military people at the symposium who were still saying, no, we could defend ourselves, or first strike, we could take out the rest of the Middle East. And you said you put your watch on the table and said, go, you know, like a fail-safe exercise. You said,
yeah.
And I mean, I'll hand you the narrative back to you, but you said that the military man you were talking to said, right, there is no deterrence. We would just destroy each other.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, well, there is, you know, for those who understand how these technologies work, they know that there is no deterrence. They know the truth. They have seen the truth in the last Lebanese, the second Lebanese, or 2 years ago. Israel cannot defend itself from rockets. Regular rockets.
And
needless to say, in 1991, Saddam Hussein was able to hit Israel in Tel Aviv, like 200 meters from where I'm talking to you, with a ballistic missile. So they can hit any place in Israel, and we have no means to protect the people here. And at the same time, we can hit any place there, and not only there. We can, you know, the abilities of Israel is to very, very far.
Right. So here we are. We're in to and fro with Rod Suskin from South Africa, Sangoma Ally, and Yuda Atai. This is from our conversation July 17th, 2008, right? And just reminding everyone that, you know, everyone's great dedications to peace, we go, ooh, more impossible now and more necessary. Which is why, you know, again, inner work, backstage work. I mean, how we're described right now today, you know, the moon in Virgo, which is, you know, backstage magic for all of us, it's at one of my favorite degrees. I get to read it often on this show because something shows up here. But the moon at 28 Virgo is, in a cave overhung with twisted roots, a seeker pores over the glowing pages of an illuminated alchemical manuscript. And we go, right. You know, what both Yuda and Rod were referencing about land and ancestors on land, and not just human ancestors as well, but all the guiding wisdom stories and the beautiful language of Aramaic, which was the vernacular that everyone spoke in the time of Jesus, right? And let's remember Neil Douglas Klutz, Aramaic scholar, friend of show. We'll have him back again, many people, as well as Ed Tick on Transforming War, soon scheduled again. But in Aramaic, what Neil Douglas Klutz said, Aramaic, this beautiful metaphoric language. And when you translate it into Greek, he said, you know, much is stripped off, right? Everything sort of hums with everything, going, oh, right. And he said, you know, what comes to us in the Beatitudes, you know, blessed are the meek, used to justify all kinds of horror. He said, in Aramaic, it's more like, blessed are those who soften emotional rigidity within their hearts, for they shall have all the power of nature. Now, I say that often on that quote often on the radio, and people go, oh, you know, I'm a radical anti-religious, you know, but I love that, right? You can really work with that. And we go, right. And what Neil said is, you know, blessed are the peacemakers. He said, pretty close, but everything in Aramaic is sensually nature-based. In Aramaic, it would be, blessed are those who plant peace. Right. And even in a small way, you know, for us all, you know, to plant something with a dedication, we say a ritual is not some hokey thing that somebody else makes you do, or our ancestral thing that one has forgotten, it's turned into superstition. It's any physical thing that we do with dedicated symbolism, by the planting of this tree, by the watering of this frog, by the what may it be, right? Again, you know, this power of connectivity. And the thing I always use from Neil Douglas Klutz as well is, you know, he says, when Jesus said, be as wise as serpents and as gentle as doves, the word he uses for serpent in Aramaic is the same word for Eve and wisdom. And so I said, Eve, wisdom, serpent, same word. And he goes, yeah. I said, so all religious wars and strife and suppression of women and nature and on and on, you know, is a translation error? And he goes, yeah, pretty much. Intentional translation error. So that's why, you know, we are all detectives, like, where did this start? And what's the thing? And what keeps it going? You know, the retaliatory, the more attacks, the cruelty creates more cruelty, and the hardening of hearts. And I was inspired to get back in touch with Ed Tick. I mean, we all get in touch with people who has what to bring to this council of now, you know. And Ed Tick, you know, I hadn't talked to him in years, right? It's time to get back in touch. And I go, hi, and he's off, but he'll be back, and we'll book him in November. But he's the one who said, you know, many things, but the Odyssey is a manual for how you take veterans home. It takes 12 years. And what he said about soul loss, because he's been working with veterans from Vietnam to now, and he said it's actually gotten more horrific because the more advanced, you know, the more destructive weapons are. He said, you know, in Vietnam, horrible, terrible things, many things. But the weapons would only fire a couple rounds, right? And then you had to reload. When we get into Iraq, you have a weapon, one has a weapon that once you start shooting, it's 500 rounds, like, and everything in front of you is dead. And your soul has left. Right. And so he does a lot of dream work and practical work, you know, to take veterans back to Vietnam, to rebuild the temples they destroyed, to take them to the Asclepions in Greece, which is what he's doing now, the ancient dream incubation places. You know, we want to call the soul of everyone back, you know, because when we see horror horror, cruelty, and sadness. That's why it's our responsibility. You know, if we're listening now, we're talking, we're breathing, right? And we're not probably under immediate attack, and we might know somebody who died, but not right in front of us at this moment, right? So that's why it behooves us, like, well, what can we do? And what can we invite into the large atmosphere to create the atmosphere conducive to the desirable? And then it incarnates into actuality and then connections. To stop, to invite in Trickster, you know, weapons stop firing, it's to everybody. It's why we're gathering tomorrow. Let me bring up Friday the 13th as chiming in. You know, so it is Friday the 13th tomorrow, and we could all use some more Venus as the antidote to hyper-yang death frenzy and of uninitiated Mars, which is intrinsically retaliatory. And it would happen to any of us. I mean, if we saw someone, something, some being we loved killed him, just, so, of course. and that's why, again, it comes to us. So Friday the 13th. The pre-Christian tradition is that when Friday, sacred to Venus, right, it's Freya's day, you can hear it in French, Vendredi, but the only reason we have a seven-day week is because of seven visible planets, Sunday, Monday, Marsday. So Friday, sacred to Venus, and 13, sacred to, to the goddess, 13 lunar months to a year. When they coincide, one was supposed to make love, or at least art, all day, right? So that's why it sounded pretty woke to the Christian monks, right, who deemed it unlucky for them, lucky for us. You know, so whatever you do tomorrow, make beauty. Make beauty, make dedicated beauty somewhere. Let's all do that. And that's why I'm giving myself a pre-eclipse birthday Zoom, just for us to continue brewing, inviting Pele to express herself, inviting the spirit of the land to cooperate, inviting the weapons to backfire, inviting to not fire, inviting, you know, again, that we gather sane, reverent people to just slow down using everything practical and imaginative, both visionary activism, right, to call off this slaughter in Gaza. The Hamas slaughter, horrific, absolutely. We did not know that that was in the planning. We know that this is in the planning, right? So it's like, oh. And again, listen to Mustafa Barghouti on Democracy Now, October 11th, 2023, that the Dementors are very naked. It's like, he's like, I'm going to redesign. Well, he said, I'm gonna restructure Gaza so, you know, it will not be recognizable for 50 years. And we go, much of that already. But he wants to annex Gaza and the West Bank. And we go, no, no. And we speak to the already, you know, about to, right, because Netanyahu had to get elected or he'd go to prison. There's a resonance here. Why have we been outsourcing our authority and our Mars, our Saturn and our Mars to sociopaths, right? So let's go to our last very short clip from Yehuda Atai and Rod Suskin. Here we go.
Our tradition is to tell stories and to sit and listen to each other's stories. And people tell their own stories more than anything else is what works for us. But the stories are also the stories of the ancestors. It is a culture that honors the ancestors. And the Middle Eastern cultures, Jewish and Arab, are cultures that honor the ancestors. And those are the stories that we need to listen to. And that's why, as I said, lucky we have the Nelson Mandela figure to embody that. But Israel has got to start elevating those people to hero status. The people who are their wise spiritual leaders. And that's how those stories come out. That's how the right stories come out.
Right. So here we are, team, and we know that this crucial time right now, Pluto station direct, like, transformation. But it calls on all traditions. You know, who knows about Dancing with Demons, right? What are all those, you know, fantastic Rudra mantras to pull up right now, which are like, whoa, spooky and dark. What about all the fantastic cultural beauty of exorcism in the Middle East, the Egyptian czar, where the spooky, dangerous climate and music takes the dancer part of all of us down to the earth, and she or he thumps the earth, thump, thump, and takes on the demons of the community. And works them and changes it into joy. Those are traditional, it's called a czar, right, the dances. You know, let's bring all of this into play and dive deeply. So we do want all those things, and then at some other point, well, probably tomorrow night. So Friday the 13th, it is a Zoom open to all beings. Go to coyotenetworknews.com, you know, to cool out the conflagration. That the imaginable realm is the way. The power of an eclipse says, you know, may this, fill in the blank, eclipse this. Remember, Pacifica was born at a Pluto stationing eclipse time. Cool. Saturn in Pisces, realm of the dream world, quintiles Jupiter, the portal, our responsibility, opportunity to invite in the impossible desirable to the party. Because Earth can no longer tolerate this humanity outsourced Mars and Saturn setting the world on fire. You know, the I Ching says, sacrifice to the ghost river and the underworld powers. Retire, pull in, not to react at the moment, right? To brew. This is a powerful time of opportunity to animate the desirable metaphors. So, and it says, immerse yourself in the situation and endure. Keep small distance by focusing on real integrity, real leadership. A cycle is ending. Accumulate the new. Well, we're going to be working with this for a while. And again, all of the experiments, you know, let us withdraw into a deep council, coyotenetworknews.com, to confer with the intelligences that be wiser than ourselves. Here we go, team. I'm always grateful to Pacifica. I'm always grateful to Kirsten Thomas, a wonderful board op, for doing all these things. And I'm always grateful to all of us. You know, sacrifice to the ghost river and the underworld powers, whatever that means. Here we go. We will reconvene. Well, tomorrow night, 4:30 West Coast time, 7:30 East Coast time, coyotenetworknews.com to find out more about that. Friday the 13th, Eclipse Pluto convening. And we will convene next week again at this time. Oh, yeah, delay.